Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness. And I cannot think of someone who's more in tune with evolving consciousness than tonight's guest, Dr. Michael Cotton. Michael Cotton has developed an incredible technology called Higher Brain Living. We're going to be talking about that and also about human evolution in general. Michael, welcome to the program again.
Thank you, Alan. It is fabulous to be here again.
Yes, I know we did an interview last year, and your Higher Brain Living is really taking off around the country. Can you just talk a little bit so people know what your technology for Higher Brain Living is? And then I want to talk about the 6FBOC, but let's talk about Higher Brain Living first.
Sounds great. Well, I think that everyone on this call has an understanding that we don't use all of our brain's potential. In fact, that there's now a solid body of science to back this up. There's a multitude of studies showing that there's untapped potential in the brain. It's been done in the University of Wisconsin and Richard Davidson's lab, to Andrew Newberg at the University of Pennsylvania in the medical school. Numerous studies showing that there's a highly evolved part of our brain, particularly, there are other regions, but specifically the prefrontal cortex. And that part of the brain appears to be largely dormant and latent potential. And what we know is that what it's associated with, when it gets more energy, it's associated with more clarity, more confidence, more purpose, more meaning. It's even the part of the brain that leads to enlightenment, when we think of that term enlightenment. So in a nutshell, what Higher Brain Living is a 22-step program that fulfills more of this higher brain potential in all of us. It's a 22-step weekly protocol where you see a trained, licensed, certified facilitator for a 45-minute long session. So each of these steps has a 45-minute long session where they cue pathways in the body that release energy that goes into that higher part of the brain. And over time, there's a shift in center of gravity into those higher brain structures and the access to that empowered state that goes with that. And so with this program, more than just getting energy into that higher brain and creating those higher states of consciousness, we also have a very profound system, a guidebook that provides this step-by-step unfolding of how to use that higher brain in your life. So you're able to take this higher brain energy, this empowered state, and through this guidebook, you're able to create a new life map and bring that empowered, that change-seeking part of your brain to all areas of your life, which I believe is how real true and lasting change.
But let me ask you an important question, and one that I would really like to understand is that, okay, everyone has this prefrontal lobe that is not yet activated. It would seem like you wouldn't have to take a course. It would seem like there's a natural biology that should be innate to the human being that allows this brain function to come online. Unless, of course, our culture, our society has numbed us and shut us down, then we need a technology that has work as a key to activate that. So where are you coming from in that sense? I would say you're...
I think your thought process is right on target. And what I see happening, first of all, we have to kind of look at the evolutionary process in general and understand on a bigger scope, it's not always successful in the particular path it sets out on. And so
that doesn't make sense, though. How could it not be if biology, is developed in success? Biology comes because of successful transmutations, mutations. You know what I mean?
Well, I do, and that's only one of the, that's a Darwinian evolutionary mechanism, but that's not the only mechanism of evolution. But even with that said, the point is that species go extinct. Therefore, that evolutionary path failed. And so
species go extinct, and that evolutionary path failed because the adaptations to the environment weren't, you know, successful. But
that's right.
We're talking about, you know, we're talking about something that's that's beyond Darwin, because if usually a part of the body develops in response, but if you're talking about the prefrontal lobe, prefrontal cortex that hasn't been activated, I mean, we're talking about a higher level of spiritual manifestation. But what were you going to say?
Absolutely, we are. But even if we want to put it on in more purely Darwinian type terms, the fact that the anatomy has shown up, okay, the fact that there's an emergence anatomically, does not guarantee that we create full functionality out of that new structure. And so there's a lot of variables that tie into whether the species really is able to use that just because it pops up. In fact, there's a study I just read published out of the Smithsonian, where they've now found fossil record of birds, of the early kind of reptilian type birds that had feathers on their body that they're now convinced were never even meant for flight. And yet somehow some of them figured out how to start using these feathers. And it's completely rewriting that evolutionary track. They figured out how to start using these feathers. They think they were actually original intent was for insulation. And they figured out how to start flapping them at some point. And they were able to, at one point, generate flight from them. This has been even published in the journal Nature very recently.
Well, so go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, so the point is that whether or not we have this untapped part of our brain is really not debatable. I mean, at this stage of the science that we understand, we can debate how it got there and what part evolution plays in that. But there are a multitude of studies now that are able, for instance, to measure the prefrontal cortex in 30-year-long, very advanced Tibetan meditators that have set in meditation for 4 hours a day. And they can measure not only EEG changes, but structural changes in those higher centers of the brain that are not showing up in everyday people walking down the street. And those changes are associated with higher end human experience.
I get what you're saying. And these higher end human experiences, of course, is the future of evolution. I totally agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
But have you ever heard of the neurophone? I just interviewed Patrick Flanagan, who's invented a device where you put it on your forehead, and it does put more concentration there. It rushes more blood, and people have these higher meditative experiences through this thing called the neurophone. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of it, and I have, you know, I've Googled it and looked at it a little bit. To be perfectly honest with you, I don't have a real good understanding of exactly what it's doing or how it's doing it.
Well, when you get to New York, and Michael is going to be in New York for the New Life Expo and for some demos, the October 17th, 18th, and 19th, and the 20th, so you can look at the website, Higher Brown Living, for the New York schedule. But I'll show it to you when you're in New York. You can maybe see it. But,
yep.
I mean, getting back to... let's say you hadn't come along, how would nature have assisted, or how have people, is it assisted in activating their prefrontal cortex?
Yeah, I think there's a wonderful conversation in there, kind of no matter what our perspective around that is. And so what I believe happened is that this emergence happened for whatever reason, and there's this change in brain anatomy in humanity. But a large part of that, and it's not that it's not used at all, it's that it's grossly underused, and we know that too.
What is it used for when it's used? I'm just curious. What is it actually?
Well, one of the primary things they know that, for instance, the prefrontal cortex, they call it the CEO of the brain, or for what's called executive function. And it's the part of the brain that does that does everything from being able to set goals and actually take the steps necessary to execute those goals. It's the part of the brain that coordinates many other aspects of the brain. It dampens or amplifies emotional response based on its needs. But what we also know now is that it's the part of the brain where we experience purpose and meaning and spiritual connection, which I believe this purpose and meaning and spiritual connection, this is a, you know, this is our future. And that's the anatomy or the physiology of our future. And it's just not completely online yet. It's there, but it's not being fully functional. And I have my theory as to why that is. And
well, I'm interested in that theory because I think, you know, I think it's like water boiling. There's a bubble here and then there's a bubble there and then there's more. I think more and more people are being activated to that spiritual level. That's why I do this program and talk to people like you.
Agreed.
So I think, and I do feel as if there's another part of my brain that is opening up when I have spiritual type experiences or even creative experiences where new thoughts come in. So,
right.
But why do you think? Yeah, go ahead.
Experience of insight, for instance, the sociobiologist Rebecca Costa has written extensively about this, of how the prefrontal cortex is that part of our brain where we have these like post-rational or trans-rational insights and ability to solve problems or change things that we were just stumped with before. And that also comes from the prefrontal cortex of the brain.
And so, it seems like our natural evolution, I'm just sorry to interrupt, but I'm just saying
it seems like
that is our natural evolution. I'm not saying we shouldn't do your technology, but it seems like the way we're moving and what we can also talk about the sixth epoch is that humanity itself is collectively being activated to function on this higher brain level.
If indeed it comes to full fruition. And I would say, what could be more natural than one human helping another human realize that potential, just for starters?
Well, it's like, you know, it's like that 100th monkey example where that monkey started washing her potato and then helped other monkeys wash their potato. And eventually all the monkeys washing their potatoes because somehow the collective race itself, the morphogenetic field of the species, had that programmed in there. So maybe that's what you say you're doing.
Well, yes, and we're just helping. Well, here's what I think is the primary issue that's going on with this. The lower part of our brain, the primitive part of our brain, is a fight or flight, stress-producing, primal system that's designed to protect us from our environment. And I believe up to this point in humanity's history, even though we've went through several evolutions of consciousness, that part of the brain has still been largely dominant in us.
Right.
And that part of the brain takes energy, it takes blood flow, and it has its own agenda below the conscious threshold. And its agenda is just to survive. And it evolved at a time when the environment was predator-rich. And if you look at Paul McLean's work on the brain, what we see is that the brain has evolved in layers. And so nature doesn't abandon something that works. It can't just erase what was old. What it does is layer over it.
Can I just ask you, do you think there's a conspiracy?
Yeah.
We can continue that point, but I just want to get back to the point you made right now. Is do you think there's, and some people do, there's some sort of conspiracy in a sense that is keeping those brains activated by putting people into fear, by corporations, you know, talking about these.
Well, it's kind of the chicken or the egg. To me, it's kind of the chicken or the egg there. I don't, you know, is the people that are propagating that or promulgating that, are they, you know, it's like, those are lower brain strategies. That's how the lower brain works. And so I don't know that it's a conscious act. You know, I'm not sure it's a conscious conspiracy as much as it is just an outcome of living from a lower brain dominant perspective, which a large part of our world still is, and all of us to some degree. That's also been pretty well established, that below that below our conscious threshold, our lower brain processes all information before the higher brain even has any awareness of it. And its job is to defend you. And so what's happened, I believe, is, you know, through this new emergence, is that the energy hasn't caught up with that, the blood flow hasn't caught up with that, and I believe it's because of that arresting grip of the lower brain that it hasn't totally happened. So now what we've done, we've very rapidly created a world that is so complex that we can't process it. And so the lower brain has very simple mechanisms, and it's reacting to this complexity. And it's just continuously reacting on some level to the complexity of the world in a fight or flight type response below the conscious threshold. And that doesn't allow that shift to happen, that energy to build into the higher brain. So now we have this imbalance between, the environment that we've created, which is creating challenges that the lower brain can't deal with. But because it can't deal with, that in and of itself makes it try to defend us from the world, all happening below the conscious threshold, which none of that is conducive to getting energy into those higher structures of the brain.
And so it's a struggle. We're in a battle. And what your work, you're saying, is help jumpstart the struggle towards the function, towards getting the blood flow to the other aspects of us.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way to say it. In fact, that it helps shift that energy up into that higher brain, and because, as you said it, there is this percolation happening. The reason this technique works is because that higher brain is there. It's trying to come online. There's potential in there for way more than what we're experiencing, and so when we can start shifting some of that energy into there, it kind of wakes up itself and and then it starts to cycle its own energy and starts to promote that higher brain response organically.
Organically. Yes. Wait. But do you know the movie Solar Revolution? Because they talk about these as we move into new galactic space. There's more DMT that they're saying will flood the brain, which is a chemical, I think, natural hormone that helps these higher brain functions. And it's a natural process of a sort of galactic cycle is what.
Did I lose you, Alan? Oh, do you hear me? Alan, I believe I lost you.
Oh, do you hear me now?
I do, yes.
Okay, sorry. I was just mentioning the fact that some people have claimed that as we move into a different solar cycle, more DMT will be released naturally in the brain due to cosmic radiation that will help open up these centers. Have you heard about that at all?
I have heard about it, but it's another one of those things. I don't feel like I have enough knowledge around it to make any kind of intelligent claim in that way. It does sound pretty cosmic to me, so I'm not sure.
So tell me then, as you, because I saw your work, it seems like a little bit like network hire, whatever. We don't have to compare it, but you're lightly touching the body in order to get these prefrontal lobe to activate. How does that actually work?
So we know that there's untapped potential in the higher brain, and what I know that all of your listeners know is that there's also an energy source in the body that is largely dormant or largely untapped, that a variety of different healing techniques or wisdom traditions for thousands of years have called on or worked with in one way or the other. So we've called this untapped energy in the body everything from chi to ki to prana to kundalini, all of these different names that we've used. And there's been, and I've studied this extensively, there's a commonality to pathways in the body, running down the back of the body, these subtle energy pathways that have been called everything from, meridians to nadi points in yoga. Even the Kabbalists have names for this. And so there's this latent energy source in the body that's been worked with healers and wisdom traditions for thousands of years. And so what I've done is I've really started extensively studying that once I started seeing what was showing up with this higher brain living process. And I found that there's now science showing that these pathways are what's called piezoelectric. These pathways that run through the body or through the back of the body. And piezoelectric is a term that means that if they're touched or compressed or stretched in certain ways, they release energy. Because they are, in fact, exquisitely energy sensitive and energy dense. They're
crystalline. You could see a piezoelectric effect by rubbing two quartz crystals together. They spark. It's the piezoelectric potential within those rocks. But anyway, so there's a piezo.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And in fact, the what they now know about these pathways, and this is using Western scientific language around it, right? And what they know about those pathways is they are crystalline in nature. That's a fact now. They're what's called microtubules and microfilaments, and they're crystalline. And so what we've done is kind of cracked a code around these pathways, where through a very specific protocol, this energy is released in a way that moves to those higher centers of the brain. Now, how do we know that? Because we
how do you know that? And what exactly are you doing? Because it just looks like you're not doing much. I have to say. I mean, I'm sure you're doing something.
Exactly. But what happens in the person, the response in their body and the response in their life is quite dramatic. So how does that happen? The real key to this is that the power, the wisdom, the potential is in the higher structures of the brain. And so when we tap this in or cue this code into these pathways in these very specific ways through these touch points, when that energy is released, it goes to the higher brain. And we can measure that with EEG. We've done it a number of times. We can see energy increasing, brain waves changing in that part of the brain when this happens. Well, not only can you measure it with EEG, but you can see it happening in the person's body. One of the first responses, as you witnessed, is they have this surge of breath, this higher, we call higher brain breath, that starts to pump through their body spontaneously, organically, like something's breathing you, not that you're taking a breath. And what's happening is that the higher brain is now creating its own feedback mechanism. So it is now, once these pathways have cued, it's nudged that brain awake enough that higher brain is now saying, oh, this is potential. I have potential. Look what I can do. And it starts creating this feedback, and it starts expanding your respiration and starts to pump more energy up to itself. And why this is happening, we can measure it with EEG and see more energy building. And also what we know is that the person receiving this will consistently report the types of internal experiences that we know are associated with energy going into the higher brain. They will feel more confident. They will feel more clarity. They will feel more love. They will feel more joy. They will feel more purpose. All of this starts to happen once energy builds in that higher brain. And so with each session, your brain is getting better at co-opting that energy or pulling that energy up out of those pathways and energizing, self-energizing, creating its own feedback to bring more energy into itself. And what I believe, Alan, and this is a bit of a stretch.
That's okay.
Highly theoretical. I don't have any evidence to really prove this, but what I think has happened is that these pathways that we've known, I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right?
I'm an acupuncturist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
And so what I think is that this system in the body somehow was meant to hook up to the prefrontal cortex of the brain to supply energy to that in some way. And because of that lower brain resistance, it just never, it's never fully come online. And so, and that's why when we code this in a certain way, when that moves, when that little nudge of energy moves into it, we get a very dramatic response because all of that potential is waiting in there. And then the brain starts to cycle that. It starts to create its own feedback, actually starts to move through the body in a cycle as it's self-energizing. And so the things we know, regardless of you know, how much of this is theoretical and on that level, what we do know, what we absolutely know, is that through cueing these pathways, there's a shift in energy in the higher brain. We can measure this. We also know there's a very profound and very dramatic response that happens in the human body as that energy starts to move through it. You can literally see this. We also know that when this is happening, that the subjective experience of the person receiving it is very, very dramatic, and they develop an empowered place around that, and we are able to help them then apply that in a step-by-step process to all areas of their life.
So this is really, you're really part of accelerating evolution here is what I hear you describing.
That's whatever, absolutely what I believe, Alan. If you really want to stretch this show a little bit more.
Yeah, let's keep stretching.
Yeah. That's what I love about you, Alan.
Thank you. No, but tell me. So tell me, yeah.
Well, so what I really believe with the whole this whole evolutionary thing and this whole evolutionary process is that now that humans like us and like your listeners, we're waking up to some of this. Mm-hmm. And we're becoming conscious of the fact that we are part of this 13.7 billion year unbroken string of evolution that really started at the Big Bang. First there was nothing, and then there was something. And this something, this matter and energy that there was there at the Big Bang is exactly the same matter and energy that's in your and I's body and brains today. Those same protons that shortly after the Big Bang occurred that formed out of this soup, matter energy soup, those very same protons are the same ones that are in you and I right now. You know, the iron in our blood, the calcium in our bones was forged in a exploding star billions of years ago. It's the same stuff, and that stuff has been winding itself up in some inexplicable way through one of the processes that we call evolution until now 13.7 billion years later, it's resulted in us, and you and I and all of us are awake to the fact that we are that evolutionary unfolding, and our consciousness, our awareness of that, the choices we make from that level of awareness are in and of themselves evolutionary mechanisms, new evolutionary mechanisms.
This technique itself is evolution itself coming forward to say, hey, this is part of the evolution. Is that what you're sort of saying too?
I fully believe that, and I don't see how it can really be any other way, because once we hold the knowledge that we're part of that 13.7 billion year unfolding, and that we now have conscious choice, which isn't happening in the lower brain or necessarily in lower animals, right? There's a lot of unconscious habituated patterns and behaviors. And now that we become conscious on this level, we know that the choices we make determine the direction that evolution goes. Think
yes.
about that one.
Well, is it a choice, though? Is it the choices that we're making? Because it would seem like we don't really have a choice if we're being driven by evolution. You know what I'm saying?
But I'm saying that on this level, we are evolution.
We're so we don't have a choice. We're moving forward.
But our choice is part of that evolutionary unfolding. The ability to make choice on that level is evolution itself. It's a new mechanism that has emerged in evolution.
Mm-hmm. No, I know what you're saying, but I'm just wondering if we really have a choice or not, if evolution is moving through us, you know? I mean,
But it's moving through us, in us, and as us. And we are that.
Mm-hmm. But so
we're not really other to the whole process.
So if this, so you've developed one way. We're here to expand all everyone, and not everyone could just do these technologies. Is there a way everyone could get these aspects to really start to live in this, what's been called the sixth epoch, or whatever you want to call it? Can we all just get it?
I mean, at this stage, I think part of why Higher Brain Living is here is because we haven't all been able to just get it. And that by no means am I trying to make the point that Higher Brain Living is the only way that people can grow and evolve or even access more of their brain.
I know that, but I just want to know, because it's a long process. I mean, we need to all get this, is what I'm saying.
Yes. And that's why I'm working very fast and hard.
But there must be, evolution is directing you, it seems like, right?
Well, yeah, I think so.
I mean, you're an agent of evolution.
Yes, I agree.
So it's up to you to sort of keep moving forward, right? I mean, you're working for all of us, on behalf of all of us.
And all of, yes, you're right. And all of us that are awake enough to know.
So what is the sixth epoch, as you've been, as I've been referring to? How do you define that? Because it sort of fits in.
Well, the sixth epoch, if we look back through history, what has been demonstrated now is that the world has gone through five major epochal shifts. And I'm using that term. I believe, was first used by the great historian and developmentalist Gene Gebser. But we could also say stages of consciousness or waves of consciousness.
Yeah. Ken Wilber uses stages. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Stages or structures of consciousness. Absolutely. Yeah. Gebser used the word epoch, and I particularly like it. And what he was able to demonstrate, and it's consistent with, you know, spiral dynamics and Wilber's work, is that there have, in the last 100,000 years of human history, there have been five major, you would call them epochs, or what we would call stages of consciousness. And they have moved through this 100,000-year period from what we would call archaic to magic to mythic to rational, to pluralistic. And so pluralistic is this stage now that you and I, Alan, and that most all of your listeners, that's been kind of our dominant center of gravity, which is an inclusive, a pluralistic, humanistic, multiculturalism stage of growth.
Wait, do you mind just going through the other stages? I mean, I find it historically interesting, these others. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind taking it a little slow, we have some time. I don't know how much time you have, but I'd love to go through it step by step.
Yeah, so if we go back about 100,000 years ago to the early human civilizations, and that stage of consciousness we refer to as epoch, that early epoch or archaic stage, and it's very much fight or flight driven. You know, it's based on food, sex, fighting, you know.
Right, the four Fs, as they call it, right? Yes.
Yeah, right, which is also very lower brain dominant. And
right,
I think as we move up this hierarchy, or what we would call holarchy, because real development transcends and includes, right? Not transcends and disassociates, or transcend and marginalizes, it transcends and includes. And so somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 50,000 years ago, then we had this magical stage of consciousness show up that burst free. So it's this dramatic shift in worldview and the way we see the world. And this stage of development is where we get really magical thinking. It's pre-rational, right? The real rational structure hasn't emerged yet. And so this stage, for instance, is where, you know, we would believe that if we, I can't even think of a good example. If we,
well, you know, believe in birds flying, you know, where the superstitious stage. Yeah.
Like, that's exactly.
But there might be some truth in that as well, you know, not just like can't just write it off as, you know, primitive beliefs. They actually might have actually accessed the part of their brain that's no longer functioning. That's just my opinion about those early stages that of development. You know what I mean?
Yes. Okay. And they were perfectly adequate. I mean, they were what was necessary at that period of time. Each one of those was a major blossoming of consciousness. And there was, each one of them brought with it more consciousness, more inclusiveness, an expansion of care and compassion and love. And so we move from that archaic stage into what's called the mythic stage, which is also another way to say that would be traditional stage. This is where most of the world's great religions first were birthed or came from. And so this mythic stage of development is a very traditional values, very law and order type, right or wrong, black or white. They called it mythic membership because it's where many of the world's great myths come from, you know, Moses parting the Red Sea and out of that stage of development. And from that mythic stage of development, then came the rational stage of development. And this happened, I mean, you know, we have inklings of this showing up for long periods of time. And then somewhere around, you know, the Western Renaissance, from the Western Renaissance to the Western Enlightenment is where this stage really kind of blew up and became a dominant epoch or structure. And that that is where we had the scientific revolution. It's where rational thought started to become the dominant mode, dominant worldview, the dominant way we process reality. It's where, we got... and it's what a lot of the people in this next stage, this green stage, really despise, because a lot of what also come out of that, you know, a scientific revolution was weapons that, you know, that could destroy us, and corporations that were very greedy and doing bad things. But what we can't ever forget is that, you know, there's a dignity to each of these stages, but at a certain point they go pathological.
Each stage, in a sense, where each stage reaches a point where it needs to move on. If it's
right.
held onto, it starts to get corrupted or somehow, right?
What happens is it's every stage is largely defined by solving the problems that were created by the previous stage. But at a certain point, it then creates its own problems.
Right.
And another emergence has to happen. And so what's happened now is that now we've moved into this pluralistic stage, which really become a solid structure about the
1960s. Well, let's define the plural, like the way you've defined the other ones, because I'm curious about the ramifications of this next stage that we're in.
Well, this pluralistic stage.
Yeah.
I'll point out the dignities of it, right? The what it brought in that were just amazing, virtues. And that is, again, each stage expanded more care and compassion. If we go back to the earlier stages, you know, the archaic and magic stages, they're largely egocentric and they're very much ego driven. One of the great blossoms, when we moved up into that mythic stage of development, it was an ethnocentric stage. All of these great religions, right? You could now extend love to someone else. You could care very much about someone else. You could sacrifice for someone else. But the rub there was, you know, as long as they had your skin color or believed in your God or that's ethnocentrism. And to us today, that's kind of a dirty word. And
right. That was the tribal mentality. I think some Gepser or somebody calls tribal. tribal stuff, right?
I mean, tribal and into that next stage, that mythic stage above tribal. The magical stage is usually most associated with tribal consciousness.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a fine line in there.
Well, no, I think so, that stage is also the family consciousness. You know, it's like your family.
Yep.
That's right.
Yes.
Right.
And so then, once we started getting into this rational stage, we started to become much more pluralistic. And by the time this next wave, what we would call spiral dynamics, calls the green meme, okay, or also the humanistic stage or the pluralistic stage, what that did was then extend care and compassion to everyone. I don't just have, not only am I only concerned about me, and I'm also not only concerned about you as long as you're a Christian or as long as you're a Muslim. I'm just concerned about you because you're a human or a sentient being on the planet. And so I can have care and compassion and concern for you. And that's what that stage brought in. And it really got its feet under it in the 1960s. And from that came the civil rights movement, came, the real strong points of the feminine movements, of environmentalism, because we can even extend care and compassion to other sentient beings. All of that came out of that stage, and all of that was wonderful. But the evidence now is that it's just simply collapsing on itself, that it's in gridlock, and that it's developed a lot of really ugly pathologies that have crept into it, and it's just stopped it from going anywhere. And I like the Einstein line, you can't solve a problem from the same consciousness that created the problem, right? So
the next level is now arriving, and you're saying it's pluralistic.
Sixth epoch. And again, it's just like the statement I made about the brain. There's no guarantees here, right? I mean, it's not 99% of every species that's ever walked to this earth is extinct. And so we know the direction, you and I do, and your listeners. We understand the direction that evolution is moving. And we can start seeing this now and making choices to support this unfolding. And so this next epoch, the great developmental researcher Claire Graves said that the movement from this pluralistic stage that most of us are embedded in from our worldviews and our value systems, et cetera, that the movement from that fifth epoch to that sixth epoch is a greater movement than the combination of than all of the previous stages put together. It's that dramatic.
Oh, really? So I didn't realize that. That is dramatic. So I don't think at this level of its beginning shift, we might not even know what it'll really look like.
We don't know what it's going to look like. We get little bits and pieces of it. And so how this really ties in with higher brain living, Alan, is that what I'm insisting is that these stages of consciousness, okay, we talked about these epochs of human culture. Well, those are, you know, those same epochs are consciousness of an individual, right? It's groups of individuals that create cultures.
Right.
And so those epochs have unfolded in stage-like sequences in time. And what I'm insisting is that these in some way line up with the layers of an unfolding of the brain structure that's occurred through biological evolution in time.
I believe that absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that makes perfect sense. I think, isn't there like some term for that? Like, what is it? There's a recapitulation of theogony or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the, but it's a bigger level.
Recapitulates ontogeny.
Something like that. Yeah. Which means, you know, the evolution of the individual is recapitulated in the bigger society, or you know. So
right.
I think they're well. I and so this next level, as we start to culturally use the prefrontal cortex, I don't think we've even explored the the true manifestation of what that looks like in a sort of, I would call it multidimensional way, you know?
Right.
I mean,
right.
I'm not, that's a little out there, but I do think there's...
No, I agree with you, Alan, and that's why I think that why this work is so significant is that, again, those stages of unfolding consciousness are in association with the unfolding stages of the brain that have occurred through evolution, and that what I believe the shift, the most powerful shift for the greatest number of people to start to explore this epic is to be able to have a catalyzing agent that engages more of that dormant part of the brain or activation energy that can get into that part of the brain, because it's you can't, it's very hard to get there without the physiology getting there.
Well, yeah, I mean, without the physiology getting there, you're not there, right? I mean,
right.
It doesn't exist because you don't have the consciousness to even appreciate what that's all about. So there must be, because you're aware of it, and many, many people are aware of this approaching epoch. I mean, I think that's what the, you know, it's just at this rally in New York, 400,000 people march for climate change. There's something that is happening, you know.
But one of the challenges, I believe, within that is that is of great concern to our pluralistic sensitivities and that green stage of development, and rightfully so. But the problem is that so far, we don't have a lot of good solutions coming out of that yet. There's kind of a gridlock within it.
There are no solutions coming out. And plus, the other half of humanity, the whatever percentage, is holding on to those old lower brain functions of greed and survival. And the more things I have, the better they are. I mean, this is the conflict we're in right now.
And so to me, Alan, the single greatest thing, at least what I know, of my understanding, and what I feel like I'm here for, the single greatest thing that can make the most shift, I believe, is to get energy into the dormant part of the brain so enough people can start to wake up as we then help create the new maps to navigate the new territory with.
Right, I agree, and not to like, I think I mentioned this last time, but not to like go against the whole thing you're promoting, but why don't you just give this out for free to as many people as possible, go into schools, you know, just start to do this work wherever you can, and, you know, just volunteer it, put it out there, and help the shift, as opposed to letting people come to you, yeah.
The better we get at it and the more efficient we get at it, we will, the more that we will be able to disseminate it and expand it. But there's some cold, hard realities with putting something out for free costs a lot of money, and that money has to come from somewhere. And so, you know, there has to be a generation of revenue to drive that out.
Right. I agree. I mean, of course you need, but I mean, if you were supported, is that something you would want to do? I'm just like putting that out there. I mean, if you were, I'm just saying, if you were taken care of, if your company, if everything was, you know, totally where you wanted to be, would that be something you would want to give out for free to as many people as possible, just so we can like accelerate evolution? Or is it have to be, you know, in this other way? I mean, is there other ways of doing what you're doing? I'm just throwing those.
Well, eventually there's going to be a lot of other ways, and we're going to create a lot of other ways. But we're at the front of the train right now. You know,
what other ways do you see? I mean, I'm just curious.
Well, I think this technique is in evolution. I mean, it's never going to be complete. There, we're going to the technique is going to get faster and more efficient. We're already seeing that happening right now. The ability to deliver the changes are going to get quicker. It's getting easier to teach. We are seeing now, as you talked about the 100 monkey effect, that I think there's starting to be an impact, a larger impact from that kind of, you know, morphic field type of idea, and that everything is accelerating and the technique is accelerating, and it's in the early stages of this right now. So to say we'll just go in the world and give this away for free is just a complete impossibility. I mean,
I don't mean idealistically. But I mean, I'm just saying it would be great for as many people to have this higher brain activation as possible. That was my idea.
I 100% agree with that. And that's my vision. And in fact, my vision, Alan, is that not every person will have to receive, this technique for that to happen, that we hit points of critical mass. And as you talked about that morphic field, you know, there's tipping points that happen in cultures, as happened with all, you know, this isn't just crazy talk. It's happened five times before in human history, you know, these huge shifts in worldview and values and consciousness and they're, you know, not everyone. In fact, the scholar and historian Paul Tillich made the statement that about 1,000 people participating in the early part of the Renaissance created a tipping point that led to that whole new worldview.
Well, I'm interested in those points of transition, because we're, like you said, are at a point of transition. So when those early cultures faced, when the hunter-gatherers faced the agriculturalists, there was a place where they didn't want to change. You know, they didn't, these people. And so there's always that resistance, but the thing about the agriculturists is that they, you know, were ensured a greater survival, because, you know, you can't always depend on hunting and gathering. And even though I call myself I'm a hunter and gatherer myself, that type of person, but I hunt and gather.
I've heard that about you, Alan.
Well, I hunt and gather information. That's my... That's where I'm going. But and then of course you get the stories. What's interesting in the Bible, Cain, who was an agriculturist, kills Abel the hunter. You know, and that's a kind of mythic demonstration of the agricultural societies overcoming the hunter gatherer societies and being
And a whole metaphor within there, right?
Yes, isn't that interesting? So. I mean, so in these transition points, there's groups of people, and you need a different mindset to be to plant your food as opposed to gather your food. That's a whole different way of thinking about the nature of reality and relationship to the world, which is what happens in each of these stages. The nature of reality itself is shifting, and I don't think we're so early in infancy in this new stage. I would be interested in laying out how the nature of reality it will be different in this next stage. I mean, if we can hypothesize, because that is really what makes a stage an epoch is for the not just the habits, but the actual reality itself is different.
Right. Well, one of the things that I think is a real defining feature of it is that that stage sees itself as the leading edge of a 13.7 billion year process, that it's a deep time perspective. We're not just these little isolated monads or these little individuated beings that just pop up at this period of time, but we embody the struggles and the strife and the whole direction of 13.7 billion years of evolution. We are that, and that we begin to live our life from the perspective that we are responsible for creating the conditions of where evolution is going, and that the choices we make count on that cosmic level, not just on at any period of time. And so because of that, and what, and this is in agreement with most of the developmental researchers from Wilbur to the spiral dynamics, is that this stage is that, that what we're calling this epoch six, it, because it can see into that deep time, it transcends and includes all of these other stages. And so we are really, even if we move up to epoch six, we're a compound being, right? These other stages are building blocks of who we are. And one of the mistakes our current pluralistic or humanistic or green wave of development has made is that it threw out the baby with the bathwater in a lot of these different stages. For instance, when it didn't like, when the orange stage started to go, or I'm using spiral dynamics terms, when that rational stage or scientific materialistic stage started to go pathological, what we saw was all of this greed and corruption in corporate America, you know, the militarization of things, and everything was material driven and money driven. So what we then did was decide that all achievement is bad, that all that all corporations are wrong. So we started to really hate all of that. We did the same thing with the mythic stage of development and the traditional values that came with that. We didn't transcend and include, right? As Plotinus said, development is envelopment. We didn't take up the enduring essential features, you know, and so, and you see a wake of within this current pluralistic stage, because they threw out the idea of being able to achieve and being able to move forward, they threw out the traditional values of the mythic level. What they ended up with kids that had zero discipline. They ended up hating any type of hierarchy at all, which is completely anti-nature or anti-evolutionary. Healthy hierarchy we call holarchy, which is transcend and include, right? It's like cells are, molecules are transcended by cells. It goes up a chain of hierarchy, and so does consciousness. And so what we believe is this epoch six sees this whole thing, and it's pulled all of it up into itself. And that's why, because of that, you know, like Claire Graves said, that, you know, it's going to be greater than the sum of all of those other epochs, because it's pulling all of those up. It's like this nonlinear emergence that happens that Wilbur calls it integral, because it's integrated all of it.
Right. I still think I'd like to just, I know you're a scientist, but speculate on the social possibilities of the unfoldment of the epoch, if we make it, if we start to live in a culture where everyone could function from their frontal lobes, you know, I'm just curious what that really looks like to you from the perspective you're at, as we really live into epoch six.
Yes. Well, what I see is that because everyone's born at square one, and because all of these stages are compounded, by the time we grow into adulthood and beyond, by the time we've captured these, you know, this rational stage of development and pluralistic stage of development, and hopefully by then this integral stage, or this epoch six stage, is that, you know, we have compounded that into our being. And so everyone is born at square one. Everyone has to move through those stages as they're developing. And because of that awareness that we create a world that not only doesn't marginalize people, but it create, it's based on evolutionary drivers, that everything that's done is honoring and promoting this evolutionary process, no matter where a person is at, no matter what stage of development they're at.
Right. That's the driving force. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, for what it looks like to me is that we have a sense of the immaterial nature of the human being, that we're not just physically based. We have the development of remote sensing, telepathy. I think those which seem to be higher functions. Yeah.
I believe that, and I believe that the primary missing element of the physiology for that, again, as we're talking about, is those higher brain structures.
Right. So, and I think it's very exciting that obviously you have a technology. I mean, talk about the people you've actually worked with and some of the benefits that you've seen, you know, personally up close in people's lives.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, as people go through this 22-step program, they literally create a new life. I mean, the first step that starts showing up with people is that they start consistently reporting they have more confidence, they have less stress, they have more clarity. They're starting to see through the complexity of their life. And people are able to take that higher brain and kind of remap their life. They're able to get the clarity within the complexity, see through it into what exactly they need to do. And they have a sense of confidence in that, a sense of meaning in that. And so what this system does is allow them to connect that higher brain energy, that empowered state, with the specific life changes they want to make. And it guides them through a step-by-step process doing that. So people completely change their relationships, their occupation, they heal physically and mentally and emotionally. And to me, the most of all, this is, if I just boil this down to a nutshell, Alan, it is that people authenticate, that they become who they really are inside. They find their purpose. They find their path. They find what they were put on the planet to do. And they have the tools and the empowerment and the right part of the brain engaged to actually live that, to not just think it or not just make it an ideal or something that happens in the future, but to really live that.
Right. Thank you for that. So you're saying you need at least 22 sessions for this to fully take hold in the human being, or it doesn't happen just one time and boom, people get it?
No, it's a 22-step program, and that was developed over years of research and development, that we were able to see that at that stage, that there was a, is that it, if we went through this 22-step program, that we could integrate those new changes, that you would always have access to that higher brain state. You would be able to apply it in your life, and the changes you made in your life and in yourself could become permanent. They weren't transitory. And so this is really designed for real and genuine transformation, not just an idea about transformation, or not just, you know, feeling a little better, but really what we call vertical transformation, you know, moving up to a new place in your life and finding out who you are.
And so once that is activated in people after 22 sessions, then they got it. Then it's downloaded. The shift is happening. They're functioning. Would you say everyone then is living at a higher brain level who's gone through these 22 sessions?
Well, the general answer to that would be yes, although what we also recommend, there's a 25-minute daily practice that accompanies this, because we want to continue to energize that higher brain. That shift, from an evolutionary perspective, is never complete, right? Because there's always more. But we want a practice that allows access to that can keep you, at the very least, being able to flip that switch on demand and change your state, change the function of the brain like that, and have the tools to be able to apply that. So the answer is yes. At the end of that 22-step program, You have everything you need in the tools that you have. The center of gravity changes happen just from going through the program, in addition to the daily practice to keep it that way. Now, there are people who choose to continue on. We have steps, elements of the program beyond that for people that are looking to, for instance, it's very common for a person to go through the 22-step program and say, this is the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me. I met all of my life goals. I started my own business. I left a bad relationship. I was depressed, and now I'm not. And, you know, just all of these amazing things have happened, and I got everything I could ever want out of it. But I want to continue accelerating my growth through this vehicle. And so it's available to people in an evolutionary model, not to maintain you or to fix you or to prevent something, but to help catalyze and direct that growth at a very rapid rate if you want to.
Is that what's happening to you, though? I mean, you're the creator, but do you find you're evolving day to day?
Well, I certainly hope so. I hope that I hope that all of us are trying to do that.
No, I know, but do you find like the technique is opening up doors and epiphanies all the time,
yes,
or have it settled into you?
All the time. Yes.
I mean, couldn't we just, because it's just a matter of touching some, it seemed to me like touching people in the right place. Couldn't anyone, with the right instruction, do that for their partner, let's say, or for some, I mean, couldn't
with,
we?
With the right instruction, absolutely.
So couldn't we just put this on television and say, follow along, we're going to teach, you know, everyone watching how to activate for your friends and partners and family their higher brain function if you do these steps? Or is there something, an intention on the part of the practitioner that also is making the effect? I'm just curious.
Well, our training program, you know, we certify train and certify facilitators in this, and it's rather extensive because the touch looks simple, but there's a whole lot of variables with the precision of the protocol.
And like so not what? Only that, like what kind of? I'm just curious. What kind of?
Everything from the depth of the contact to the vector to the specific direction to the timing of when it goes in to the timing based on the what we call the salutogenic response in the person's body, how it responds and the timing that it goes in. There's all kinds of different variables that go into the program. But even more than that, through our training program, what else is important to us is that you have the gifts that you want to give others, and you are operating at a higher level yourself. So through our training programs, we actually have it built into these very intensive retreat days where you're getting energy into your higher brain, where you're evolving and you're growing, because it's not just as simple as walking out into the world. And first you got to get someone to lay on your table, and they've got to believe you enough to do that. And so there's a leadership element of this that we teach, and a way to communicate it effectively, a way to get yourself up to that level. And all of this, if you're going to really make an impact in the world, I would suggest it's not just as simple as telling a bunch of people to touch here.
No, I'm just curious, or is there something about the teacher and the practitioners having reached that state that can then translate that and pass that on to the people that work? You need to be in the high, you just can't do this technique unless you're in a higher brain state, is what you're saying, right?
Well, I would at least say it's your effect is mitigated if you're not, right? I mean, it's not an all or nothing thing, but to really
they say you can't teach someone to ride a bicycle unless you know how to ride a bicycle. There's a transference of sorts of energy.
Right.
That's why I'm asking. Is that true or not true in this case?
Yes, that's true. And that's why it's important in our training programs that not just does the person learn the technique, but that the person evolves through going through the training program. It's built into it. It's part of it.
So just
go where I think you were going, Alan, is that we're constantly and continuously, we're looking for ways to get this into the world faster, to get it into the world with where more people are touched by it and exposed by it. We're doing that all the time. But the balance is also knowing all of these things that I know about what we just did talk about, is that we also, it needs to be able to go somewhere. There's a lot of things that started out with good intentions and became so diluted that they're just meaningless today. Mm-hmm. You know, because there wasn't a level of integrity behind them or direction behind them. And just the kind of free-for-all doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to really get where we want to go. But with that said, we're looking at ways to get this into the world faster, simpler, without people having to go through as much training. But it's that time's just not here yet.
Right. But how do you see that manifesting? I'm just curious.
Well, that's what I work towards every day. I mean, we're researching, developing, testing, looking at it. I'm writing a book right now. We're looking at ways to introduce elements of it that can shift people but maintain the integrity of what we're doing.
Right. All right. Yeah. I get it. No, I I'm excited. I mean, I think it's great work. I think I know you've been working really hard. This is what, how many years in development are you at now?
It's somewhere around 9 years now.
Right, and it's still developing, yep, and still unfolding, and I think it's great that you're putting it out there to the world and that you're, you know, an agent for evolution, which is what it seems like. So let's definitely pick up the conversation when you come to New York, you come down to the studio. I mean, but is there anything you, any final words,
Can I give a plug for my talk coming up in New York?
Yeah. Give a plug for your talk and your website and everything that's coming up. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So I'm going to be in New York, as you know. I'm going to be doing a talk at the Marriott Marquis Times Square October 20th. It's a 2-hour presentation, and I'm actually going to do live demonstrations, at least two live demonstrations of the technique where you can see this higher brain response, see energy building in the higher brain, talk to clients that receive that. So it's at 6:30. The first hour of it, I'm going to just lay out how higher brain living works, do demonstrations, actually show it happening. And then the second hour, I'm going to talk about our training and certification opportunities. And so people that stay over for that, we'll get information about what it takes to be a trained certified facilitator. We have approximately 250 across the country right now that have gone through our training and certification programs. And one of the things that you and I are in complete agreement with, Alan, is that's not nearly enough to create the widespread social change that we want to see happen. One of the things we're doing is we're recruiting people into our training and certification program. So I'm doing a talk in New York City at the Marriott Marquis, and it can be signed up for on our website. It is $97 at the door to attend, but it's free if it's signed up online in advance. And you just have to go to higherbrainliving.com and then click on the Attend an Event tab. And just scroll down and you'll see the New York talk listed, and you can click on it and sign up. So it's higherbrainliving.com, then click on the Attend an Event tab on that webpage, scroll down to the New York event, which is October 20th, and enroll in the talk, and it's gonna really be awesome. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, and you're also speaking all weekend before that at the New Life Expo, which is at the Pennsylvania Hotel from the 17th of October to the 19th. So you're going to do some demos, you're going to do some lectures, you're going to have a table there, right? An exhibit there?
Yes. And the talks at the expo will be much shorter than the one October 20th, which is a Monday night. So I'll have like 45-minute presentations. I believe they are they're on the New Life Expo schedule, but I've got at least three talks there where we're doing these shorter presentations. But the one Monday night at the Marriott Marquis in Times Square is going to be 2 hours long, and the second hour of it is going to be laying out our training program and all of that.
Well, thank you for going into such great detail here, and we'll hook up. We'll do a television show when you come to New York, and we'll take it from. I'll be in touch with you before that anyway. Okay.
Yes, for sure, Alan. It is sincerely a blast to get to do this with you. It really is. I love you. You have a really great mind, and I love to be able to just bounce around like this with you. It's just really fun for me.
It's fun for me too, because I really do think you have something, and I think there is a physiological shift that has to happen as the consciousness shifts, and I think you have one of the keys, and I'm interested in those kind of philosophical questions. So let's keep having these discussions. So thank you, Michael. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Alan.
I've been talking to Michael Cotton, the developer of Higher Brain Living. You can go to that website, Higher Brain Living. He will be in New York and all over the country giving these demonstrations, workshops, talks, really about who we are becoming as a new human evolving species. So thanks for listening tonight. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. You can also email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening. Good night.